get ready for the unbelievable, the unstoppable, and the uncatchable. Get ready for the unbodied fantasy radio theater. This month's episode is entitled The House Chronicles Part 1 and was written by Jeff Sink. Marcus, perched on the edge of his bed, was not looking forward to the day. It wasn't that this day was going to be particularly difficult or boring or anything, really. What bothered Marcus was that this day marked the beginning of the end. In just 4 days, it would happen. Completion. 5 years of studying had led up to this. 5 years of learning and dreaming. 5 years of exploring life through conversations with elders and the countless books in the library. In 4 days, that life would end. Marcus slid onto his feet and made his bed. When he finished straightening his blanket and tucking in the ends, he walked to the window and stared out. Black and gray roofs spread out from his window in unending waves, punctuated here and there by red brick towers. The sun, rising above the jagged outline of the house to the east, spread its light into the shadowy, sleepy corners of windowsills, overhangs, and balconies. This was the same scene played out every morning, but Marcus enjoyed it nevertheless. It was dawn breaking over the house. Marcus turned away. "What have you got planned for today?" Marcus's mother asked him as he appeared in the kitchen. She stirred a pot of oatmeal on the stove. "I don't know," Marcus answered. "Perhaps I'll help out in the market." "You should be preparing for completion." His mother inspected the oatmeal for a moment, noting to herself the thick, bubbling oats. She turned off the heat. "I don't need to worry myself with that," Marcus said casually. He poured himself some orange juice and sat at the table. He began cutting up some strawberries. "Your attitude worries me. You should be taking completion seriously. It's a big accomplishment." Marcus snorted. "Everyone goes through completion. It's not that special. I don't know why you're making a big deal about it." "I'm making a big deal about it because it's the beginning of your adult life. After this, you'll figure out what you want to be and how I can best serve my fellow citizens in Round Tower. Maybe I could become a bricklayer or a tailor. Then I'd be useful." Marcus's mother sighed. She served the oatmeal in wooden bowls. They each sprinkled sugar and strawberries over their steaming breakfast. "Well," she said, "what do you want to do after completion?" Marcus grinned at her. "I want to run away." "Stop being immature." "I am serious," Marcus said, a little defensively. "I want to run away and go somewhere else." "Okay, then, where are you going to go?"
"I'll go to the other side of the house, all the way to as far as I can see in my window."
His mother took a sip of her coffee.
"And where will you stay? We don't have family that far away. And you know the laws of the house. Nobody would put up a stranger in their apartment."
"I could stay in the hall. I'll just sleep there. The traveling gypsies do it."
"My son is not going to sleep in the hall, no matter how much he wants to visit the far reaches of the house."
Marcus got up from the table and ran his bowl quickly through the water in the basin. He made his way out of the kitchen.
"Listen to me. You have to find something productive to do with your life. No more fantasies. Just think about..."
But he was already gone. The market was no more than 15 minutes from his family's apartment, and Marcus often went there. The stalls were crammed into a narrow corridor stretching about a quarter of a mile from the residential area of Round Tower up to the dead zone, where no person lived. Round stone columns and ribbed archways overhead were firmly planted every couple of yards, creating a procession of entryways down the length of the market. In these alcoves, merchants jostled amongst each other, competing not only for customers, but for more space as well. Marcus conversed with the sellers regularly about a variety of things. He would check on the new goods arriving and ask from which part of the house they'd come from. In the house, all furniture was hand-me-down, and the style differed based on its place of origin. From this information, Marcus had created a map of the house in his mind, and at times he would close his eyes and daydream about visiting those places.
He always wanted to know more, so that he could further enrich his mental map.
Ah, you got another table from the Westbrick Tower. Very nice.
Marcus circled the small table, which was square, metal, and shiny.
I bet they have no problems with fires there. Everything must be made of metal. Nothing that could burn.
Mr. March, the stall owner, shook his head.
They have plenty of things made of wood at Westbrick Tower, just like here. And no place is completely safe from fire. Did you see the glass that's just come in from Onyx Hall? It's beautiful.
He motioned toward a case filled with tall, fluted drinking glasses. Marcus drew one of the glasses and ran his finger lightly over the diamond pattern etched along the base.
Don't tell my mom about these, or she'll come here and bargain with you all day to get them. Bye.
Marcus left Mr. March's shop and walked down the corridor to another stall. This one was comprised of boxes full of vegetables and fruits hanging from baskets. It was the stall of his best friend's dad.
Hey, Mr. Fenric, is Henry around?
The stolid, square-shouldered man answered without pausing in his work of sorting apples.
He's outside in the garden.
Thanks,
Marcus answered, and made for the open window. Mr. Fenric thought about whom he was talking to and added,
But don't distract him. He's supposed to be working.
Of course.
Marcus stepped into the garden. The garden was the only thing that existed outside the house, though it was encircled by it. The rectangular space was populated by every type of produce eaten in Round Tower, most of which was sold by Mr. Fenric. In the spring and summer, the garden was open to the sky, but once the winter struck, long pieces of plastic were inserted into a frame over the garden to transform it into a greenhouse. This ensured that the growing season would continue perpetually, and the residents of Round Tower would be fed. As he made his way through the cabbages and lettuce, Marcus thought about the first time he'd gone back here. He was 8, and he had never before stepped outside the confines of the house. It was like stepping into another world, to feel the sun all over you and experience the freshness of the air. The house was stuffy and artificial, but out in the garden there was something full and pristine. Marcus couldn't explain it. Even though he'd been to the garden dozens of times since, it still gave him that feeling whenever he entered it. Henry Fenric, tall with short brown hair, was covered in mud. He was wrangling potatoes from mounds of dirt, working his hands down deep to find them. They emerged looking like soft stones and were deposited in a crate.
"I'm not done yet. I still need to look after the tomatoes," Henry called, his right arm caked in mud.
"I know. Your dad warned me to be careful lest I distract you." Marcus rolled his eyes.
"Yeah, 'cause you've never come over here and convinced me to leave before I'm done."
Marcus smiled but did not answer.
"Give me a hand and water the tomatoes. Use the watering can."
Marcus moved slowly to his chore.
"Figured out what you're going to do after completion?" Henry asked.
"Nope."
"You could still come work here in the garden. My dad said it would be okay."
Marcus plunged the watering can in the drum of water.
"I can't work here. It'd be too hard. I'd be on my knees pulling up carrots or something, and I'd look up and see the sky, and I'd want to stop and count the clouds, or I'd think about how high up they were, and I'd be distracted for too long. Then I'd remember I was supposed to be working, and I'd have to go back to carrot pulling. It'd be torture."
Marcus haphazardly dumped water on the plants.
I can see that happening," Henry answered. "Maybe it would be better if you didn't work here."
Marcus stooped to inspect the ripening tomatoes.
"I don't want to work. I want to travel," he said, running his thumb over one of the leaves. "I want to see other parts of the house."
Henry didn't respond, so Marcus continued.
"Today I was talking to Mr. March about something from Onyx Hall, and I remembered, didn't there used to be a Gray Hall, too? Nobody ever talks about it anymore."
Henry carried the box of potatoes to a table.
"I don't know. There used to be many parts of the house that aren't around now."
Marcus jumped up.
"I know. Doesn't that make you want to explore and see what happened to all those places?"
Henry stood before Marcus, hands on his hips, stretching.
"It would be interesting," he finally admitted. "But there's no way you could do it. The council wouldn't let you go. You're needed here, in Round Tower, for something. Everyone is needed here for something."
"Ah, it's slavery. I should be allowed to do what I want. Life's not a game. You have to help out. Round Tower wouldn't be able to function without everyone pulling their weight. You know about those other places of the house where there are no rules. Things fell apart because nobody was willing to work for the common good. They were selfish. Don't be selfish.
I don't think what I want is selfish, Marcus said as Henry dipped his hands in the water. Actually, I think my travels would be in the best interest of everyone in Round Tower.
How exactly?
Well, you know how old the history books are. I don't think one of them was written even in our lifetime. We need new information. What if the governing council at Onyx Hall fell apart and we didn't even know about it?
Henry laughed. I think we would know if the governing council of the entire house collapsed. Our own council would have told us.
Marcus shook his head. They've withheld information before. We need a way to figure things out ourselves, not to rely on the council. Those old mechanical men up there. Marcus turned to look at the council chamber of Round Tower, which was under a clock. They just want to do things the old way, because it means that they aren't responsible to anyone but themselves. They don't even want to think about change.
Henry picked up the crate of potatoes and turned to carry them to where the other crates were deposited.
I understand your frustration, but the council's just doing what it was set up to do, he said. They want to keep things as peaceful as they've always been, and you can't blame them for that.
Marcus said nothing.
Don't pout like a little kid. You'll find something here in Round Tower that you'll like to do. You just have to keep looking.
Still, he did not respond. Henry hated feeling like he was being ignored.
Marcus!
He did not move, so Henry marched up to him.
What's wrong with you?
I saw someone, Marcus finally said.
What?
He stared at Marcus, but Marcus did not stare back. His gaze was focused on the sky.
I saw someone, he said,
flying in the air.
It must have been some kind of illusion, Henry said, moving to sit down on an upturned crate. They were in the storeroom, which was a windowless barrel-vaulted room several floors below the garden.
I bet it was someone going across one of the walkways by the council, and it just looked like they were in the air.
I told you already, the person was above the council rooms, high above. There's no way they were walking on some invisible bridge. They were flying.
But you know that's impossible.
You don't believe me? Marcus snapped. Why not? You think I'm making this up?
Henry turned to inspect the cucumbers.
I think, he began slowly, that you saw something that looked a little odd, and maybe you jumped to the conclusion.
Jumped to the conclusion? Marcus growled. You aren't listening to me. The person was so high above the house, there's no explanation except that they were flying.
Henry set down a cucumber and turned around.
Okay, then, how was this person flying?
Well, I don't know. Maybe the birds taught him how to fly, or he knows how to climb the air or something. But I want to find out.
Henry was silent.
Don't you want to know?
Yeah, I guess so.
What?
Henry sighed.
Look, I acknowledge that you saw something, and that you really want to understand it, but I think you're getting all worked up for nothing. This sounds like another wild goose chase. Chances are you'll never see that flying person again, and I don't think you should waste your time looking for him. I think you should just forget about it and focus on yourself.
Marcus stood up and placed the crate he was sitting on near the other empty ones. He brushed his hands on his pants to remove the dust and then stepped near the door.
Marcus, Henry said quickly, I didn't mean to offend you.
Marcus slipped his hands into his pockets.
No, I understand what you meant. I'm making something out of nothing here. You're probably right, because you've always been in the past. Smartass.
Henry grinned. Do you need any more help here?
I'm all done for the day, Henry said.
Good, then I'm getting out of here. I'll see you later.
Marcus left. He spent the rest of the day chatting with the merchants. As the next day dawned, Marcus was curled up on a windowsill gazing at the sky when he was discovered by someone. Someone awful.
Is this where you've been hiding from us?
The one speaking was Mr. Dominic, a man with a bloated nose, rosy cheeks, and a permanent look of concern. His aubergine robes swirled copiously around his squat frame, a frame perfectly built for his overwhelmingly sedentary duties as council chief.
We've missed you at the rehearsals.
I'm sure, Marcus said flatly. Marcus would not make eye contact with him. Mr. Dominic began marching in a little arc around him.
How are we going to do well at the ceremony for completion if one of our best students refuses to rehearse? How will you know where to stand so that you can shine the brightest and make all of us so proud?
I wasn't aware that I'd be expected to shine. Mr. Dominic clucked his tongue.
You see, this is just one of those things you would know if you'd come to the rehearsals. It's as if you want to fail and disappoint your poor mother.
Marcus paused in his efforts. He had been scraping dirt from his fingernails and lifted up his head to stare directly at Mr. Dominic. If it's such a concern, Mr. Dominic, then I'll be there for the rehearsal today. I'd certainly hate to cause you any grief. Mr. Dominic's face morphed from his expression of concern to what Marcus and Henry had privately called his bleeding heart battle mask. The edges of his lips twisted downward and his eyebrows collided, resembling S shapes and eliciting a row of wrinkles on his forehead.
Oh, Marcus, I understand that a young man like yourself may not see the importance of this event the way we adults do, and that is why I've always felt a call to guide you, personally. I want you to succeed. And so, for this reason...
His expression intensified, his lips stretching downward further than Marcus had ever seen.
I'm very excited to tell you that once completion is over and you are a full member of the house, I'm willing to offer you a position as my own personal assistant.
Marcus felt like he'd been doused in ice water. There's no way I'd work for Hugh, he spat. Mr. Dominic placed his hands in his pockets and resumed his little march.
I wish you'd understand the ramifications of this. If not for your own prestige, then at least for your mother. She is so proud of you, and she has so little in her life.
My mother has enough, Marcus said quickly.
Possibly. But, he paused to face Marcus, you could ensure her well-being with this position. I don't mean to be blunt, but if you pass up this opportunity, there may not be another one. Think about it.
Marcus was back inspecting his fingernails.
Uh-huh, he answered. And we'll see you at 4 today in the West Chamber, Mr. Dominic called,
his head already bobbing as he proceeded down the hall away from Marcus. Marcus said nothing, only stretching in his spot on the windowsill. Inside the domed gathering chamber, with its numerous scalloped arches encircling the periphery, a group of 36 people sat in wooden chairs, waiting. Henry and Marcus occupied the 2 seats in the very back, the latter slouching in his chair in order to stare at the circular fresco overhead depicting pastel-colored angels coursing through the air.
You have to do it, you know that, right?
Henry said. Marcus slouched further.
I don't see why I have to do anything. It's my future, right?
Sure, but you know it's looked down on to deny a request from the council. And Dominic already hates you as it is. He'd find ways of punishing you if you embarrassed him by turning down his offer.
Marcus sat up.
That's what's so strange to me. If Dominic hates me, why would he give me this position?
Maybe he really thinks you deserve it.
Marcus stared at Henry, mouth open.
Okay, Henry answered. So if it's not that, maybe it's the complete opposite. Maybe he wants you in that position because he does hate you, and he wants to make you miserable. Regardless, he's made the offer and you have to consider it.
Okay, so I should take this position so that Dominic can make my life hell, and if I don't, he'll make my life hell anyway. Does that about sum it up?
I'm afraid so.
Marcus's eyes wandered to the 3 massive windows beside them. The largest one was made up of an iron metal frame holding each pane of glass in place. It was flanked by 2 similar but narrower windows to each side.
It might be okay in the long run, Henry offered. I mean, Dominic is bound to retire sooner or later, and then you could probably become a member of the council yourself. You'd start out as a junior member, but...
Marcus exploded out of his chair. I saw it again.
What? The flying person. He went behind the market. Come on, maybe we can catch him.
The others seated around them turned to stare cockeyed at Marcus.
Are you kidding me? Henry answered.
Marcus sidestepped irreverently down the aisle, bumping against the other's knees and eliciting a fair amount of disgruntled comments.
We can't go now. We've got the rehearsal.
Bah, Marcus answered, finally freeing himself from the line of chairs. You really want to stay here? Henry paused and then began down the aisle himself. The market was full of people. A shipment of goods had just arrived, and the merchants were dispersing through the market, each with several boxes in tow. Marcus was weaving through the buyers and sellers. Henry was struggling to keep up.
Hold on, he called to Marcus, who continued his frenzied run through the market. Hey, he said louder, but it did not slow Marcus's pace.
Tilting forward suddenly, Henry caught hold of Marcus's arm and forced him to stop.
Slow down, you don't even know where you're going.
Well, he's got to be around here somewhere. Hurry! Marcus said, moving to free himself from Henry's grasp.
But let's just think about this for a minute. How do we know what this flying man looks like?
Marcus had no answer.
So, how are we going to identify him? He could be any of these people.
Marcus looked around. Maybe he's still in the sky, he said, then tore away from Henry and ran to the nearest window. He searched the sky.
There he is, he said, pointing to a figure moving in circles in the air. Oh my God, you're right. It is a flying person.
Marcus scowled at Henry.
Oh, come on, Henry said. Let me have my moment of discovery.
They watched the person become smaller in the sky. He's moving further away from us, Marcus said.
Toward the dead zone, Henry answered.
Marcus backed up from the window and started to run.
Hey, we can't go there, Henry shouted. But Marcus did not let up.
Many communities within the house had a dead zone nearby. Some were small and some were very large. Each dead zone had been made uninhabitable by some calamity. The dead zone in Round Tower had been created by a plague, contaminating that part of the house and killing a great number of people. Other dead zones were the results of fires or social upheaval. A few of the oldest dead zones were vestiges of some mostly forgotten ancient war. No one entered the dead zones out of respect for the lives lost, or because of superstition that a person might see more than they wanted in the dead zones. Marcus and Henry reached the end of the market, where a monolithic brick wall confronted them.
The dead zone's been sealed off for a long time, Henry said.
Marcus inspected the walls.
We can't get in there.
Marcus tested the strength of the wall by pounding on it with his fists.
There's got to be another way in, he said.
Marcus scanned the area.
There probably isn't, Henry insisted. I bet the council made sure that all the passages to the dead zone were closed off.
Then it would give me great satisfaction to find a way into the dead zone, Marcus answered. A small window caught his attention.
I wonder if this,
he said, more to himself than Henry. He pressed his face against the glass to peer sharply to the left.
Ah.
Henry mimicked. Let's get this window open. He examined the window, found the latch, and struggled to turn it.
It's stuck, he said. Probably due to decades of disuse, Henry said.
Yes, thank you, Marcus answered patronizingly. Now, can you help me find something to get this latch open? Maybe there's a tool lying around here. A hammer or something. Henry looked over the broken crates scattered around them.
I don't even know why you want to open it, he mumbled.
He handed a large strip of wood with a nail in it to Marcus.
Here, maybe you can use the nail to pry open the lock.
Marcus followed Henry's advice and slowly pushed the nail under the latch. Pivoting the wood against the window, he pried at the latch until it sprang free. He slid the window up, the window grinding against the frame.
Great, Marcus said. Now for the next step.
He leaned out the window, bending farther and farther until he was almost parallel to the floor.
You're going to fall out, Henry called. I'm fine, Marcus responded, pulling himself back inside. It looks like this is going to work out. Now, follow me out this window.
What?
There's another window on the other side of this wall, and I bet it opens up into the dead zone. We'll just walk along this edge here that runs up against the house. Marcus placed both feet outside, bent himself under the window, and then stood up. Come on, he said. Henry watched him walk slowly away before he approached the window. He put out both legs, but as he was ducking under the window, he stopped suddenly, arms bracing against the sides. Directly below him was a drop of several stories to a gray slate roof. The only thing between Henry and the drop was the ledge, perhaps half a foot wide, running down this side of the house. It had degraded and crumbled in some places.
Marcus, this isn't safe. We're going to die out here.
He saw Marcus slowly sidestepping down the ledge.
It's not that bad, Marcus answered, the wind carrying his voice. But it's falling apart. I can't do this.
Then go back to rehearsal. Henry looked down once more, then raised his chin up and stood on the ledge. He shuffled toward Marcus, stepping tenderly over the cracks and deteriorated bits. When he reached him, Henry found Marcus checking out the next window. The trim was weathered and split in several places, and the glass reflected the light, preventing a view to the inside.
Well, Henry said, go on and open it.
I can't. It seems to be stuck. Henry grumbled. But don't worry, Marcus said. I'll just break it open with something. Marcus turned his head back and forth, looking for an object. Over there, he said, and pointed to a brick lying loosely in its mortar below the ledge. Hand it to me.
Are you kidding me? Henry shouted. I'm not going to reach down for that. I'll lose my balance and fall.
Okay, move then. Marcus stooped down, and before Henry could finish saying, careful, he'd retrieved the brick. He positioned himself as far away from the window as he could, brought his arm back, and tossed the brick at the window. It pierced the glass and landed inside. Marcus slipped off his shoe and used it to separate the remaining glass from the window. When he finished, he dove through. Watch out for glass, Marcus said as Henry climbed through the shattered window. Upon gaining his footing, Henry peered around. They were in a medium-sized room, much like the one they'd left on the other side of the brick wall. This room, however, was shabby. The carpets were threadbare and dull, and the ceiling appeared to be sagging.
So where now, do you think? Henry asked, a little out of breath.
He inhaled slowly, but was arrested by a fit of coughs.
The air is awful in here, he choked.
Yeah, I bet the whole dead zone never gets any fresh air. Henry continued coughing. Let's head up to the top. I think we'll be able to see him better from up there. They made their way to a door, and as Marcus opened it, the ceiling bowed considerably, creaking and raining down dust on the two.
Oh, jeez, Henry said.
He began a new round of coughing. Marcus shot out of the room and into a dimly lit vestibule.
Where are you going?
Up. That noise must have come from the flying person walking around on the next level. He passed under a stone arch and out of Henry's sight. Henry ran to catch up.
Why is a flying person walking? He asked.
Marcus said nothing. He'd found a flight of stairs and was taking them two by two up into the darkness of the next level. Henry followed. They came to the next floor. It was spacious, with a colonnade twisting off to the interior of the house.
Where now? Henry said.
Marcus hesitated. The sound of footsteps echoed to the right. This way! He ran toward the sound and the colonnade. Henry kept up behind him.
It's too dark over here,
Henry said, regarding the unlit chandeliers festooned with cobwebs. He heard the persistent sound of running some way off. It was matched by Marcus and Henry's pace. Marcus darted between the columns, further into the shadows. Henry grunted but followed him. He plunged into complete darkness and slowed to a walk, but ahead of him the sound of running continued. Without warning, there was a crashing noise. Henry heard Marcus groan. He ran forward and, after his eyes had accustomed to the dark, found something large lying on the floor. It was Marcus.
What happened to you? Henry said.
He looked over Marcus, who was propped up on his left elbow and rubbing his knee.
I ran into something, that's what happened. Help me up. Henry took Marcus's arm and began to pull him up, but then he stopped. A knife now hovered exceedingly close to his throat.
"What are you doing here?"
the owner of the knife barked. It was a woman. Henry drew his head away from the knife, which only made the woman press it closer to him. He froze.
"We're not doing anything," Henry said mechanically.
"I see," the woman answered. "You came to the dead zone to do nothing. Seems like you were running from something. Is somebody following you?"
"No."
"Good. Then it's just us." The woman slowly pushed the edge of the blade up and down Henry's throat. He let out a small squeak.
"Please don't hurt me,"
he managed to say. The woman continued brushing the knife on Henry's throat.
"I don't have to hurt you," she said. "Not as long as you give me your money."
Henry's hand bolted to his side. "Slowly," she instructed, emphasizing her words with the point of her knife. He gingerly reached into his pocket and gave a packet of bills to her.
"Is this it?" she said. "I'm a little surprised."
So was Henry, but he didn't want to say anything else to the woman. The hand that held the knife gradually fell to the woman's side.
"In any case, I'm sure your friend has the rest."
She looked down. The floor was empty.
"Where is he?"
she yelled, bringing up her knife. Henry retreated back. He looked at her eyes, tense and piercing. The woman thrust her knife at him, but Henry dodged it. From behind her, a dark object came swinging in, striking the woman's head with a cracking sound and knocking her over. The knife clattered on the floor, landing near her.
"Marcus!"
Henry called out, breathing hard. Marcus stood over the woman, his weapon gripped in both hands. The woman, lying prone on the floor, attempted to push herself back up, but Marcus prodded her in the back until she stopped moving.
"Fine, take my things then," the woman commanded.
"What are you talking about? We don't want your things," Marcus answered.
Some thieves you are."
"We aren't thieves," Henry replied. "You're a thief."
"I'm not a thief."
"I don't believe this," Henry said. "You just robbed me. You held a knife to my throat and you took my money. What do you call that, capitalism with a point?"
"Okay, so I did try to rob you, but only because I thought you were a robber yourself."
"Well, that justifies it then," Henry balked.
"It does to me," the woman replied. "I'm a traveler in the dead zones. Do you know what kind of people I encounter here? Thieves and con artists. I have to be tough to scare all the creeps away. It's easier to get around here if people don't want to mess with you. But if you aren't thieves, why are you here?"
"We're looking for the flying person," Marcus announced.
"You saw it too?" the woman asked.
She pushed up again, and Marcus pushed her back down with a strip of wood.
"It's okay, I'm not going to attack you."
Marcus remained. The woman sighed.
"I'm looking for him too. Can I please get up?"
"Henry," Marcus said. Henry walked up to the woman, poked at the knife with his foot a few times, and then kicked at the handle, sending it skipping across the floor.
"Okay, it's safe now," Henry said.
Marcus stepped away, and the woman gradually came to a sitting position.
"Oh, I'm getting a headache," she complained. "You didn't have to hit me so hard."
You didn't have to pull a knife on poor Henry here," Marcus countered.
"Yeah," Henry chimed in. "People who walk around knifing folks should expect to be hit over the head a few times."
The woman laughed.
"I guess so. I'm harmless, I promise."
Henry looked her over. She was fair-skinned like Henry and had a slight build. Chestnut-colored hair, albeit slightly disheveled, cascaded to her shoulders. She had a face with soft features and dark, large eyes.
"What do you know about the flying man?" she asked.
"Just that he's been seen around here for the past 2 days," Marcus said.
"Why are you looking for him?"
"Do you understand how he flies?" The woman's brow furrowed slightly.
"Who are you two?"
"I'm Marcus, and this is Henry."
"I caught that,"
she said, looking at him.
"Who are you?"
Henry shot back.
"I'm Mia."
"And why are you looking for the flying man?" Mia looked away.
"My reason is my secret," she said. "I've been following him for quite some time. I must find him."
"Ah," Marcus said.
"We've been talking this whole time," he muttered, "and now he's probably gone."
He abruptly turned in the direction of the nearest window and strode toward it. Henry and Mia pursued Marcus. At the window, each of them gazed out, inspecting the skies.
"He's not out there," Henry said.
The three pairs of eyes continued their visual pursuit.
"There," Mia explained. "He just went behind that tower there to the west. Do you see it?"
She outlined the building with her finger.
"That's all the way out by many chimneys," Marcus said.
"How did he get out there so fast?" Henry asked.
Mia smiled, shaking her head.
"That's how he moves, like a storm, in and out just as quickly. We'll have to hurry to get to many chimneys before he moves on."
Mia dashed across the floor, then stopped to regard the two.
"I apologize for threatening you, Henry," she said. "If the two of you are serious about finding the flying man, I think we should track him together. I know a great deal about him, and I could use the extra help. I promise I won't be any more trouble."
Without waiting for a response, Mia sprinted into the colonnade. Henry and Marcus maintained their positions by the window.
"Well, should we follow her?"
Marcus asked, a smile broadening over his face.
"I can't even believe you'd ask," Henry answered.
He folded his arms.
"We've got completion in 2 days.
"But this is so much more important than completion. Not to everybody in Round Tower. Not to our parents.
You've got to take some perspective on this."
Henry walked to the area where the scuffle had taken place and began looking for his money.
"Perspective!" Marcus shouted behind Henry. "You want to talk about perspective? You want us to forget about a once-in-a-lifetime event to go to completion?"
Henry continued looking for his money amidst the shadows.
"Think about this. Years from now, nobody will remember when we pass through completion. But if we find the flying man, we'll be making history. The whole house will remember us."
Henry stooped to pick up his collection of bills.
"Now that's a bit of hyperbole," he responded. "The house is a big place."
"Okay, you've got me there, but you have to admit that this could be huge."
Marcus stood facing Henry.
"No, you've been having a lot of fun with this, haven't you?"
"It is interesting, apart from almost being mugged," Henry answered, a grin breaking across his face.
"And you don't want to go back to rehearsal, do you?"
Henry looked down at his shoes.
"Well, no."
"So come with me. I promise we'll make it short, just a many chimneys. If we don't find the flying man there, that'll be the end of it. What do you say?"
Henry looked down the hall where Mia had gone.
"What about our dagger-wielding damsel over there? She might try to rob us again."
"She already said she wasn't a thief," Marcus answered.
Henry didn't respond.
"If it really concerns you that much, I'll keep an eye on her. But I think you're wrong about her. She's harmless."
Henry's eyes met Marcus's.
"To many chimneys, then," he said, "but no further."
Marcus smiled and bounced down the hall like a jackrabbit. Henry followed, but with less enthusiasm in his movements.
You just heard The House Chronicles, Part 1 by Jeff Sink. Another story of The Unbodied. Stay tuned for the second part of The House Chronicles. Want to know more about The Unbodied? Go to theunbodied.com. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.